Welcome to the On the Gravel podcast with the Degradation Degenerates, your hosts Raven and Oliver here today.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Happy New Year for our listeners. You know, not too much to talk about during the F1 off season, but there is enough to put out our bi-weekly episodes. So.
Like this new snazzy name for the podcast.
Yeah, new name. We're going to be on our own page from now on Apple Music and Spotify. So you can find us there under the Aletheia Network podcast group. Check out all the other podcasts, rate, listen, subscribe. Yeah.
It's just beautiful. I like the On the Gravel better too.
Yeah, we were coming up with names and I said On the Gravel and I feel like we just both kind of felt like it worked really well with Degradation Degenerates and like, so yeah, that's how we got that. That's where we are now. So we'll start this week off by talking about the Helmut Marko contract extension. This is pretty big news.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel like this is something that it's like impending doom. You know, it's something I expect every time his contract, you know, comes to its end. You know it's going to get renewed. I've always thought that Helmut Marko is kind of invincible when it comes to losing his job. But, you know, typically I think Red Bull prioritize Helmut's scouting abilities over anything else. You know, Helmut Marko is one of the most, biggest wild cards, I would say, when it comes to, you know, the types of things he says in the paddock. Like, his actions are kind of rash, and
he's also 80 years old.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, he's been doing it for a long time, you know?
Yeah, he was a former racer, so.
But he's definitely not liked by a lot of fans, I know, in the paddock.
Him and Christian Horner always seem to be butting heads almost, right?
See, yeah, they seem to be butting heads a lot, but they also seem to have a decent working relationship together, I guess. Like, I think maybe their personalities don't clash that well, but when it comes to, you know, finding and scouting talent and then getting the results out of said talent, that's where they really shine, and that's why Red Bull is going to continue to re-sign Helmut every single time that, probably till he dies, I'm going to be completely honest. You know, I don't like Helmut Marko as a person. I think he is a very annoying person on the paddock. I think he says a lot of things that he shouldn't. But if I was looking at it from Red Bull's perspective, when it comes to, you know, somebody for scouting and development, like, I don't think you can get anybody better than Helmut Marko. Like, bringing in people like Max Verstappen, Sebastian Vettel, like those kinds of people, and, you know, like, really nurturing and training them, you really don't see that level of consistently bringing in top tier talent like Helmut Marko does. I mean, dude's got his lazy eye and somehow that thing just finds the superstars. So yeah, I'm not really surprised, but I'm indifferent, I guess. I'll get over it. I'll get over his in the paddock antics.
I mean, I feel like his relationship with Max is kind of going to lead the way on how long he stays here. I know Max is kind of, I don't want to say getting bored of F1, but he's got such a high limit where he knows that once he gets to a certain point, he probably is going to go to WEC, like he said with Fernando. So yeah. I don't think until that happens, Helmut will be, he'll still have that job. Like,
yeah,
that's job secured until the next drivers, I think.
And like, that's a relationship with Helmut that I think has always been very good. Him and Max have always had a good relationship. And it's just because Max Verstappen is so good at what he does that you can't really piss Helmut off because, you know, him and Helmut's relationship is fully based around Max's results. And when Max is performing like he does, it's impossible to make Helmut angry. You know, just look at how Helmut treats Sergio Perez, like in the media, compared to Max Verstappen. It's like he treats Max Verstappen like the godchild, and then you'll hear him talking behind Sergio Perez's back every single race weekend, you know, essentially just preying on his downfall. So yeah, it's kind of interesting to see with him. Dude, my bad. I almost forgot to wake up this morning.
We did almost have a little incident of not being on time, but luckily Oliver woke up and we made it on time today.
Yeah, sometimes so. Those alarms just go off with no sound, which makes no sense, but it happens.
Let's go to the next thing on the list. It was reported that Alonso was seen celebrating with George Russell and his girlfriend.
Couldn't pick anybody better.
Is it his girlfriend, George Russell?
Yeah.
Okay.
George has been posting a lot more of his girlfriend on the internet.
They have definitely gotten to a good relationship, it looks like, from the media side of things. Same with Alex Albon and his girlfriend.
Oh, yeah. It seems like Alonso's kind of like fun guy. Kind of like a...
He's the fun uncle of the grid, for sure.
Dude, if I got the opportunity to celebrate the new year with anybody on the grid, it would probably be Fernando. Behind Charles Leclerc.
That man knows how to party.
That he does. Like, dude, cool uncle is the perfect way to put it. I feel like just...
Everyone respects him. Everyone loves to be around him.
He's the most experienced driver. You know he'll nurture you well if you give him the time to do it. He's gonna guide you, keep you on the straight and narrow, but also, you know, still give you a good time. So
I think the biggest piece of evidence that he's the fun uncle is Miami of last year, where he looks up at the board and it's like, wow, Stroll's doing great.
Dude, it's like it gives me like Kimi vibes. He's just happy to be there. You know, it's like, you know,
Kimi wasn't happy to be there. Kimi was there because he wanted to be there and then left when he felt bored.
Hey. It's just a hobby. I don't have to do it if I don't want to.
It's so good.
It's just a hobby for me.
Back to more important news. Zach Brown was on a podcast, and I forget which one it is on. I'm sorry about that. But he was saying with the budget cap that teams shouldn't have limits to testing on the track or in the wind tunnels, which in my opinion would help a lot of the teams on towards the bottom of the polls. So what are your thoughts on this, Oliver?
So I do think it would help teams towards the bottom, yes, but I think, especially coming from somebody at a team like McLaren, it's always going to help the teams who have a higher budget more than those bottom tier teams. You know, taking the budget cap out of testing is going to be so beneficial to teams like, you know, Ferrari, who have their entire track facility that they own and test on in the off season. You know, you'll see a lot of videos coming out from that track in Italy. I can't remember what it's called for the life of me, and I'm kind of disappointed that I can't remember. But you know, you have teams at the top of the grid who literally own their own racing facilities, but then you have teams like Haas who struggle to hit the budget cap, even when they try to spend all their money, like across the season. Do I think giving them more testing time is good? Absolutely. But I think keeping the budget cap, or, you know, having the budget cap encompass testing is still important. So I think I see what Zach Brown is trying to get at, but I think it's important that testing does, you know, pay a price, I guess.
We also brought up the point that there is no more in-season testing for teams, which me and you kind of got onto the role of, should they bring that back with the budget cap being introduced?
I think they should.
Me and you said that during summer break, during that like middle week, they should be able to maybe get like a certain distance per driver to drive.
Yeah, it was our little talk on the way here this morning. I think, like I understand. Actually, no, I really don't understand the banning of in-season testing. But I think giving them, especially in a period of the season where you're not racing for an entire month, giving each car, let's say 100 kilometers, like on a testing track, like they do in Bahrain at the very beginning of the season.
And end.
Yeah, and end at Abu Dhabi. Take them to a track, have it be an in-season test, just like the preseason test in Bahrain. You know, televise it. Let us see, how those mid-season upgrades are working on the cars. I don't want to, come back from mid-season testing and then have... I mean, I do like how exciting it is to just see those teams jump, but I would love to get
see
an
the
insight.
Improvements and stuff.
Yeah, get an insight to those improvements. Like, I would have loved to see that McLaren this past year tested mid-season when all those upgrades came that, really cemented it as the second best car on the grid halfway through the season. And I think it's good for the drivers too. It keeps them sharp. It keeps them ready to go. It's not like an F2 or an F1 Academy where they're not racing for 2 months between races sometimes. I think it keeps the drivers sharp. It gives the fans a lot more to see. You get a lot more insight on what's going on, back at the factory, and you get to see it on track, which is really cool. And it gives a lot more information for the teams to build on and improve on. Like, I feel like you see a lot less improvement, across the season between the teams than you used to when in-season testing was a thing. Like, I think what their worry is with in-season testing might be, maybe it's a team like Red Bull. If they had more in-season testing time, they'd be even further ahead. But it's like, at that point, does it even matter? Red Bull's so far ahead anyway, no one's catching up to them if they want to. So, what's the hurt in giving a couple extra 100 kilometers of testing to each team, How do you feel about it?
I think giving a little bit more testing to each team, especially for like the midseason, to see the upgrades and also just to kind of see where the cars are before the upgrades would be cool. Like,
yeah,
have them do a few laps, like 5 laps even, just of the normal car, come back the next day with all the upgrades, and you can start your testing time there to just give more the fans a kind of understanding of where the car is now before the next race. I also would like to see almost like a special by the F1 that kind of just goes into like what changed for each team.
Yeah,
because
I think that would be very cool.
Unless you're like actually really doing your research and digging through a lot of different media, you're not going to really know what these teams upgraded.
Yeah, you're just going to see halfway through the European tour that a team is shot from the fifth best to the second best car on the grid.
Like McLaren did last year. So, and then like for this year, it would have been nice to see what Aston Martin did to make that car absolutely abysmal for the second half of the season.
Yeah, what the drop-off that happened with that team, I would have loved to have seen, what that month encompassed for them. Because it's like, since they're not getting any on-track running, how are they supposed to test their quote-unquote upgrades? Those were downgrades. But, how are they supposed to test those quote-unquote upgrades to the best of their ability? If the best testing is going to be on a track. Like, how much are you really going to understand in the simulator, in a wind tunnel, compared to the stuff that's actually going to happen on the track? So it's definitely something I would like for them to toy with, maybe come 2026, something like that. But I think for the foreseeable future, it's unfortunately for us and the teams as well, because I know they'd use it. It's something that's probably going to go untouched. Where are we headed to next?
F1 Academy schedule. It's been out for a while, but we haven't really looked at it in depth and talked over it. But you got 6 races.
We got seven.
What?
Yep, we got Jeddah, Miami, Barcelona, Zandvoort, Singapore, Lusail, and Abu Dhabi.
Oh, and Abu Dhabi. That's the one I was missing. Starts March 7th through 9th. It's going to be the first race weekend. Then you got Miami in May, Barcelona in June, Zandvoort in August, Singapore September, Lusail in November. So
and you got your Abu Dhabi in the first week of December.
Nice.
It's very interesting to me. You know, it's especially with the beginning of the season, it's, you know, race a weekend, 2 months off, race a weekend, 2 months off. It's, I completely understand, I guess, with a feeder series, you know, they're not going to have the budget and the resources of a, of like a series like F1. So they can't, you know, they can't race as often. And I get those gaps. But I think the most disappointing thing that I'm seeing when I'm looking at the schedule is just how many Middle Eastern races there are. It's a 7-race calendar. 3 of your races are in the Middle East. It's kind of annoying, especially with a track like Jeddah. You know, an F1 car can really show off how good a track like Jeddah is when it's a very speed-oriented track. Like, I don't know how I'm going to feel seeing, you know, essentially Formula 4 cars run around a track like Jeddah. You know, it's going to look like a completely different track and not for the better, in my personal opinion. But I think, you know, a lot of the female talent on the grid this year looks really good, so I'm excited to see how they do and, you know, see if maybe those girls get a shot at, you know, a spot in like F3 or F2 from these performances that they get in F1 Academy. Like, that's what I'm really, really hoping for with this is, you know, let's say champion of the series is, I mean, you can't do it because
you, say,
know,
you can't just promise a spot.
Yeah.
But I know what you're trying to say, and I think that's a really cool idea. And like, I do think it is going to introduce more women into F2 and F3 and allow them to compete and try the spot at F1. Like you said a little bit earlier with the races being a month in between, I think it's smart just because these drivers aren't the same caliber as like F1 drivers, obviously. So
not even the same caliber as an F2 driver or an F3 driver. F3,
exactly. Yeah. So, but like giving them time to work on it after having like an actual race, I think it's way smarter than just trying to shove it to the next week and then do another race and not really have time to like improve or anything.
I was going to say, they'll definitely get a lot of simulator time between these race weekends, which I think is very important for them to really prep them for the rigor of a typical F1 season,
I guess. Also gives them the chance to like actually make the venues a little bit more personalized and get a little bit like of their own ads out. And so
for sure,
I think it's smarter than just having it like a week to week, kind of how F1 does. So,
and the nicest thing about this is this year should be the first year that F1 Academy fully follows, you know, F1 is a series. It's going to follow the F1 circus around. I know last year, you know, they raced on the same weekend as F1 for some races. They raced on the same weekend as WEC for some races. I think it was kind of all over the place. Their scheduling was kind of horrible, if I'm going to be completely honest. You're going to, with this new calendar, you're going to get a lot more eyes on F1 Academy because you're going to have, at some venues, you're going to have 4 different classes of cars being F1, F2, F3, and F1 Academy all racing on the same weekend. So, you know, if you're buying a ticket to those races, you're getting a lot more action. You're getting to see a lot more, you know, future talents of the sport and prospects on the track, which I think is really cool. So I think that's the one thing I really like about the F1 Academy schedule is that it's actually going to follow the F1 circus around, which I think is very important to get it included and get eyes.
I agree. Moving on to our next point, Mercedes extends their engine deal with Williams past 2026. I think that's a very big deal for Williams to just kind of understand and be confident with where your engine is at, because
and they're locked for the new regulations too. You know, with it going past 2026, we are fully locked to being a Mercedes supplied team. And, you know, with, you know, Red Bull Honda, that's got to be the biggest partnership on the grid. But I think from manufacturer to team, I think the Williams Mercedes link is so like embedded in that team. Like, I could never see Williams dropping Mercedes.
As their engine Mercedes, supplier.
Yeah, I can never see him getting rid of Mercedes engines. I mean, Toto Wolff has such a huge influence on that team. I mean, you have James Vowles as the team principal. So, you know, former Mercedes.
Former Braun team member too.
Yeah.
That shocked me.
He's been in the sport for so long.
I know that, but I didn't know that he was on the Braun team that won. So.
Yeah, this guy knows how to win, and he knows a Mercedes engine is a beast.
But, like, I feel like him going from Braun, not straight to Williams, obviously, but, like, that transition and, like, being in those situations where money is tight.
Yeah, especially your first couple years of the Mercedes.
And,
you know, 2010, 11, 12, 13. Yeah, the beginning,
after Braun got bought out, yeah. I think it really has helped Williams a lot. Like, to have a car that is that fast on the straights, like, that's pretty impressive to do with what their budget is. I believe they have one of the lowest budgets.
Oh, yeah. I mean, bar, like, Haas and maybe Alfa Romeo, I think they have the lowest of any other team.
Bottom three for sure. So, for them to even, you know, have some, I don't want to say pole positions because I don't believe Albon ever took pole, but
no,
definitely some top three podium finishes. And
yeah,
on,
I mean, that was with Red Bull, but yeah, just having somebody who has that experience at a team that's, you know, trying to build back up, and then a team principal like James Vowles, a tested engine supplier in Mercedes, something that James Vowles knows like the back of his hand. You know, I think they're in a really good place, and that decision really cements that. You know, James Vowles has seen Mercedes at its best. He's seen Mercedes at its worst. And this is just another reinforcement of the fact that, you know, not only does he have belief that Williams is on the up, but he has belief that Mercedes as an engine is also on the up. Because Mercedes engine, definitely not the best engine the past couple years, but, you know, Toto Wolff has really been hinting about, you know, how good the Mercedes is going to be this coming year, which I'm still very intrigued to actually see how good the Mercedes is this year. If I see them come out of the block this year in Bahrain and then just put it seventh and eighth in the first qualifying session, I'm going to be kind of pissed off, just given how much he's been talking about
it. Can't wait for the George Russell. The car looks fast.
Yeah, car looks very fast. I'm thinking a P3, and then he goes and sticks it like ninth. But no, Toto Wolff never talks this much about it, though. And maybe he's just trying to, you know, dig at Christian Horner or something like that. But there's definitely potential for the Mercedes to be a powerhouse. And Williams are definitely going to hop on the power unit side of that and ride with it. And I'm very excited.
Speaking of next year's car and Red Bull, according to head of performance engineering Ben Waterhouse in conversation with Race Car Engineering, it's quoted, he said that the RB20 is a car that's at least 6 months old already, and we are starting to shift our attention to the RB21, even if the season hasn't started yet. Hopefully it gives them the same amount of freedom to do the same in 2026, which is ridiculous.
Saying the RB20 is 6 months old and the season still has 2 months before it starts, like that scares me.
I feel like FIA is probably going to come out with a rule that probably delays the process of focusing on the car, especially if you have teams that...
Well, it's already been said that the 2026 cars can't even be worked on until the beginning of the 2025 season. So the RB22 will not commence work for at least 14 months at this point.
So that's good, but... Obviously, I imagine they'll probably have half the team working on upgrades for this year's car. And then as we get closer and closer to the end of the season, they'll just probably offload more of those people to working on next year's car and speeding up that process. But if these guys are making cars a year in advance and then just sitting on them and working on them,
we know they're going to be champions before the season starts.
Yeah, it's not a good look for the rest of the grid. And unless you have money to match it, it's going to be hard to come back.
Yeah, if 2025 is not a slump year for Red Bull, I'm going to be very worried. In the sense of, you know, for especially your lower budget teams, like you saw with Haas in 2020. Literally, their 2020 car was a carbon copy. Their 2021 car was a carbon copy of the 2020 car, because they were trying to save as much money, as much resource as they could for the 2022 season. That's what you'll see a lot of the lower end teams doing. If I don't see any dip in performance from Red Bull in 2025 while they're shifting their focus to creating a new car for the new regulations, and then that new car comes out and dominates again, we are screwed.
No, the sport's definitely going to have FIA is going to have a predicament with that.
And they'll probably go out and ban some innovation that Red Bull comes up with, like they did with Mercedes and the dual axis steering, like they did with the double diffuser, you know, like a decade ago at this point.
I'd say bronze era.
Yeah. So, dude, I'm kind of worried.
It's not promising for the sport, but as a team, you like to hear that. Like, if I'm a Red Bull fan, I would be shitting bricks almost.
Yeah, but it's like also
that idea.
I guess as a fan of innovation and as a fan of just the beauty of engineering in the sport, that Red Bull dominance is like so cool to see. I can't even lie. And that's coming from a Ferrari fan. It's very cool to see just how consistent and how powerful those cars are that they come out with year in and year out.
It's like what Mercedes did.
Yeah, like, you know, hindsight is a great thing, but looking back on it, I do appreciate the success of Mercedes, and I'm very just impressed by it.
That's why we can't hate on Red Bull too much, because we just had this with Mercedes. So
I can't hate on Lewis Hamilton that much. Whether I like it or not, dude, is one of the greatest of all time.
7 or 8 time world champion.
Depending on who you are.
It's such a good meme.
Yeah, he's either, well, I don't know, he's a 6, 7, or 8 time champion, depending on who you are. If you're a Felipe Massa fan, you might want to look away.
Moving on to our next point, I'll let you kind of take helm of the ship here. But
yeah, so this
Tim Mallion.
This article literally came out on the walk here, and I thought it was, you know, definitely big enough to include. Tim Mallion, just got appointed as the new sporting director in the FIA. And I just wanted to, like, go over his pedigree a little bit, because, you know, when I was reading through it, I was very shocked on just how much experience this dude has. So he was an engineer for Jaguar and then Red Bull for the 12-year period where Red Bull won their 4 consecutive constructors and drivers titles, with Sebastian Vettel headed out for Sauber Motorsport. He was their head of track engineer in 2015. You know, still staying in F1. Then moved on after that to completely different discretion of racing. Went to DTM in 2016 with BMW Motorsport. He was their chief engineer there. So, you know, taking on a much more rigorous and high-profile role in that team. Stayed there for a couple years. Believe he won 2 championships with them, 2 constructors, 1 drivers, if I remember correctly. And then he moved over, stayed with the BMW family, but then moved over to their Formula E team, was their chief engineer there as well. Was there for a year. I don't really know how it went, but then after that, he, you know, stepped down from the engineering roles and then really moved into the FIA's advisory role. So 2019, he joined as the FIA head of research, did that for a little bit, and then in 2021, he got appointed as the safety director of the FIA as well. And now you got the next step, the new sporting director of the sport. So that's your person who is above the race director every single week. That's who your race director is going to report to, that kind of thing. But I think it's very important and good to see that they hired somebody who has this kind of pedigree. He's worked in so many discretions of motorsport. He's worked in the FIA for the past 5 years now, 2019, 2023. Yeah, past 5 years now. So these are the kind of people that you want to see, you know, holding those roles, who know the ins and outs of F1, who know the ins and outs of motorsport as a whole, given the other discretions that he worked in, and who have a background of, you know, working with the FIA. I think this was a phenomenal appointment, if I'm going to be completely honest.
Do you know who he replaced?
Oh, I don't remember who he replaced. The fact that I can't remember the sporting director of this past season off the top of my head.
Steve Nielsen.
Steve Nielsen. Okay, yeah. That sounds right.
Had much experience as an engineer with Lotus, Tyrell, Bennington, back to Tyrell, Honda, then Arrows, back to Renault, and then back to Lotus Renault. So he's got the experience.
That's a pedigree and a half.
And then also some other stuff with Toro Rosso and Williams.
Yeah. So,
Toro Rosso. But
yeah, I'm very, very excited to see how he advises.
I was gonna say, it's going to be interesting to see. Also, for anyone that doesn't know, you threw out the racing series DTM, which I didn't know, so I had to look it up. But it's the Deutsche Torwagen Masters Series. It's a German racing league. So
one of their highest forms of motorsport over there. Think of it as like your WEC GT3 cars having their own series, something like that. Super, super cool series to start watching if you haven't before. I followed it a lot when Liam Lawson was racing there in his conjuncture with the F2 season like a year and a half ago. It's a really cool series, and I definitely recommend it to those that haven't actually checked it out. You get a lot of good racing there. Alex Albon was also there for his year off from the sport as well. Won a race, did well there. And it's super, super high competition as well.
Moving on to one of our last notes, we got some FIA crash test news. It was reported earlier this week that Ferrari was the first to pass this year, which is great news for Ferrari fans.
Yep, something to share about.
Red Bull nose failed again this year, just like last year. It was reported that they were running a little bit more of an extreme setup on the nose to get a little bit more downforce and feel, but didn't look like it worked out perfectly, so they're back to the drawing board for now. And it is reported by Lydia Mee at Sports Illustrated that Aston Martin is reportedly going to be the next team to pass.
Yeah, FIA crash test is very interesting to watch. I'm very surprised about the Red Bull nose failing, you know, given they're so, like we talked about earlier, so consistent, so good. Maybe it's because, you know,
they did this last year, apparently, where they failed the nose crash test and ended up winning this year. So, not saying that their first option is a guaranteed, but I don't think they're in a spot to be stressed out.
Well, I wouldn't be stressed out when Max Verstappen doesn't crash as well. So,
I'd be stressed out if I had Checo Perez.
If I'm Checo Perez, I might be punching the air. But as Max Verstappen not crashing at all, I'm not too worried about the no safety of the car. But yeah, definitely interesting to see. It's cool to see who passes and fails, because it's like it's a huge safety concern. So. Yeah, failing that is not a good look.
Last little talking point I want to bring up is, have you seen Lando Norris's Instagram recently?
No, let me pull
this man
up.
Is taking straight inspiration from Lewis Hamilton. Like, down to the pose, man.
Down to the pose?
Like, head down, like, cropped sleeve shirt.
Yep. Oh, yeah, we're seeing it now.
And he's so tan.
What are these vacation photos? Dude, it's not even like the way he's taking the photos. It's the fashion as well.
No, it's like the perfect mixture. He's totally being, which I love to see. We know.
It's pretty funny.
I forget which race it was this year. It might have been COTA. Yeah. Lewis and Charles were taking pictures together.
Uh-huh.
And Charles was just standing there like how every man takes a photo, just stands there doing nothing. And Lewis was like, no, like pose, like lean against the thing. And like,
I do like that about Lewis.
And like, if you look at Charles's pictures now, he is much more like posed for the picture and like looks way more comfortable, which is great to see. And you know,
he's getting into his thirst trap era.
I think Lewis being a huge fashion icon as well.
Yeah.
I really do want to see these guys dress up for like pre-race.
I completely agree. And yeah, you really only have like two huge fashion icons. It's Lewis and then the sneaky little Joe Guan Yu, who really likes his fashion.
Which you got to respect. And
I do.
You don't all have to have like the custom Ayrton Senna outfit for Brazil, but like,
yeah,
throw in a nice suit. You know, you got two Ferrari drivers. Get them a Louis Vuitton suit.
Well, I think that's just Ferrari. You know, it's definitely going to be somewhere in their contract. The only thing I ever see, at least in season, Carlos Sainz and Charles Leclerc wearing is some Ferrari branded gear. That's all I ever see them in. And it's kind of annoying. You know, even there, you know, if you go on, you know, Ferrari social media or Charles Leclerc, Carlos Sainz social media, you know, they do it multiple times a year where they'll get their Ferrari tuxedos and it looks super cool. But that's like the only time I ever really see them dress up and, you know, start looking dapper.
That's what I'm saying. Like, kind of how like NBA and NFL players do it.
Oh, yeah.
Like just... It's a short walk, you know.
Those you're looking off the nice bus photos.
Just say you're gonna get a nice picture hitting the media. It's gonna be good. So, I don't know. That's something I would like to see a little bit more, a little bit more fun before the grid starts.
And all
like,
your fangirls would love it. I'm looking at you, Charles. I mean, every woman loves you already, but
and George Russell apparently
and me.
Okay. I think we're going to end it on that note. Thank you guys so much for listening. Like I said earlier, rate 5 stars, follow all the other podcasts at Aletheia Network. Check them out. We got another show coming out today. We got Zach Elliott's The Deep Fade coming out tomorrow. So
lot to look forward to.
Lot to look forward to, people. Hope you guys have a good start of the new year, and we'll catch you in 2 weeks.
We'll catch you again on the gravel.
On the gravel. Later, everyone.